This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The Midwest is not only at the geographic center of America, it's also central to the history of our nation. And that brings with it many opportunities for history-minded travel. And all that is the subject of the new book, Destination Heartland, a guide to discovering the Midwest's remarkable past. It's by Illinois-based writer Cynthia Clampett, who I spoke with about a month ago. Now that summer travel season is getting underway, we're revisiting that conversation today. Because of that, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, here now is my conversation with Cynthia Clampett on Destination Heartland. Cynthia, welcome to the 21st Show.
Greetings, Brian, and thank you so much.
So, Cynthia, you begin the book by describing what it is and what it isn't. And one of the things it's not, you say, is the tale of an inexperienced provincial emerging from a cocoon and making a first tentative foray outside the neighborhood. So maybe we can begin by you talking a little bit about your background, especially as it relates to where you've traveled and lived.
Well, my background is pretty much a life of learning and travel. My dad was with the airlines, and my dad had a great appreciation for exploring. So we traveled. I grew up traveling. And so once I got into my, you know, my own life as an adult, that just remained an important part of my life. And so as I moved more into the area of food history, my travel became more targeted on that. So of course, you had to go to Southern India and to China and South America and the places that our food came from. So 37 countries on 6 continents so far.
Yeah.
So
wow.
I do know what's available out there, and it's wonderful. I mean, this is not a put down of anywhere else, just as I make it clear, I hope, in the book that this is not a put down of other regions in the United States, because I love all the regions of the United States, but not too many people are talking about the Midwest. And as I explored the Midwest for my previous 2 food history books, I just kept running into just fabulous stuff. And I kept thinking, does anybody know about this? And I have found over time that a lot of people don't. A lot of people just don't know what's here.
And I want to get into some of those great destinations that maybe people don't know about. But let's talk about the book broadly. It covers Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Missouri, Michigan, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota in order of statehood, all inarguably in the Midwest, also the Plain States, Kansas, Nebraska, and North and South Dakota. So I guess I want to begin with a broad question. What is the Midwest?
First of all, the 12 states that you just listed are basically what the government identifies as the Midwest. But the reason, because a lot of people ask, well, why are you including Nebraska and Kansas? That's on the Great Plains. Well, Nebraska and Kansas were actually the original Midwest. When the region was being settled, you started with the Northwest Territory, and then when the Louisiana Purchase happened, you got the new Northwest Territory, and all of a sudden it was very difficult for people to talk about the region. Are we talking Old Northwest? Are we talking New Northwest? And so newspapers of the time decided, well, we've got these two states that are kind of right between the Northwest Territory and the Spanish-owned Southwest Territory. So oddly enough, the term Middle West didn't come out because it was from east to west center. It's because it was between the Northwest Territory and the Southwest Territory. Those are the two first states that were called Middle West. And so I figure you have to include the two states that were the original Middle West. And then over time, sort of, because the term Corn Belt started in Ohio. And so you have the word Corn Belt moving across westward as corn spreads, and then as more and more farmers and sort of your classic hardworking rugged individual start to populate the Midwest, the term Middle West, and then eventually Midwest, moved eastward. And so the two eventually sort of overlapped. But yes, I know the Great Plains are sometimes people say, oh, that's not the Midwest. But since that was the original Middle West, I felt absolutely obligated to include it.
So the book is organized around the different ways people can connect to history, from looking at exhibits to actually participating in reenactments. I thought maybe we could go through those sort of frameworks and pick a few examples to highlight. Let's begin with living history, witnessing history. What is that? And maybe we can start by talking about the Klein Creek Farm in Illinois.
Living history is pretty much defined by not just having a bunch of old buildings, but actually having people in costume who are recreating what life was like at that period. Costumed docents are extremely knowledgeable. They spend a lot of time learning so they can not only answer your questions, but they actually are doing the skills that were needed back then. And that can be anything from, you know, carving wood to starting a fire to plowing a field. Klein Creek Farm is unusual in that most living history venues are put together of multiple buildings from various locations to create sort of a museum. Klein Creek Farm is a specific farm, a historic farm in DuPage County that is, you just get the farm, but you get all the property and you get the bees, you know, the beekeeper, and you get the animals, all the heritage animals and the barns and the kitchen. I love the kitchen because it's, you know, all the modern conveniences, because, you know, it wasn't until the mid 1800s that we had stoves. So you've got this great big cast iron stove in there, and next to it hanging on the wall, a bathtub, because that's where you would heat the water on the stove. And that's where you would take a bath, is in the kitchen, because that would be the one house that was warm, or the one room in the house that was warm. So they have people there actually plowing the fields, taking care of the animals, driving the wagons that follow the people who are picking corn. And actually, if you enjoy a little element of participating when they have their annual corn festival, you can actually be amongst those that are going through the fields, picking the corn, husking it, and throwing the corn into the wagon behind that horse. So they combine a little bit of that, go ahead and participate. Most living history venues do. They want you to have some contact with it.
A little dirt under the fingernails, so to speak. All right, we need to take a break. We're going to continue listening back to my conversation with Cynthia Clampett. The book is Destination Heartland, A Guide to Discovering the Midwest's Remarkable Past. More to come. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're revisiting my conversation with Cynthia Clampett, author of Destination Heartland, A Guide to Discovering the Midwest's Remarkable Past. It's a history-minded travel guide for the greater Midwest, which stretches from Ohio in the east all the way over through the Dakotas in the west. Because the conversation's on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always interact with us in real time on Twitter at 21st Show, at 21st Show. So the book is framed around different ways to experience history, right? We talked before the break about witnessing history. You can also peruse history by visiting museums and historic homes and those sorts of things. And Randy is on the line again at 800-222-9455 with some memories of visiting presidential libraries. Randy, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, when I was a young child, my parents decided for some reason to visit the some presidential libraries. One was Harry Truman's over in, now mind you, my parents were farmers from Pierre County here, and they just decided to visit Harry Truman's library in Independence, Missouri, and then President Eisenhower's, and then General Grant's. And we camped as a family when we got off the farm. And each place, Dad had a story of something in his childhood, of his parents either going to an event surrounding that person or whatever. And he would laugh about the memory and so on. And it gave me such an incredible respect for that person, and also my parents. And I know it was before I drove, so I was a captive, but I really remember that. And it's always been an incredible trip. And so this lady is correct. The number of things that are here and the depth that's here, you know, the leadership that came out of this area is just unbelievable.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing those memories, Randy. I appreciate it. I won't argue with you. Midwest is best. Cynthia, let's talk about that. Presidential museums fall sort of under the idea of perusing history.
Absolutely.
And I think the Abraham Lincoln Museum in Springfield is well known. It's familiar to many of our listeners, maybe some of the other ones he mentions. But it was new to me. It was the Rutherford B. Hayes Museum. So make the case for visiting President Rudd in Fremont, Ohio.
Well, first of all, one of the things that you find as you go to a lot of these places is how little we know about any of these people. There's so much information. I mean, it was the first presidential library, but you suddenly find out, oh my gosh, I had no idea that he made that law or that he was in charge of that particular issue or, you know, and not just Hayes, but also Hoover, which is the other one. Now, the reason I don't include all of them is because I tried to go for diversity, not have everything in there be the same thing. So I do two of the presidential libraries or museums. But it's just so many layers of information that you just don't know about these people. He was the only president to have been, I think, wounded 9 times during the Civil War. This is Hayes again. He was the first president to visit the West Coast. He was, you know, there were just all these firsts that were available. Where you're going, I had no idea. And I mean, do we even mention him in history books nowadays? We kind of skip over everybody between George Washington and you know, Abraham Lincoln. So I think it's worthwhile from that standpoint to just find out that there's a lot more to history than we have time to teach in the schools. And it's also just a really beautiful place. I mean, the location is gorgeous and the home is beautiful and the museum is fascinating. And it's just definitely worth stopping just for no other reason than because you probably don't know anything else about Rutherford B. Hayes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we had another caller from Urbana who didn't want to go on air, but wanted to recommend Historic Fort Snelling, full staff, reenacting a military outpost. It's in Minnesota. And this, you have this in your book, right?
It's in the book.
Page 162. Yes. This falls under the idea of exploring history. These are more sprawling sites. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. There are some places where, I mean, the exploring history sort of varies from big sites like that, where you're going through a dozen buildings, all the way up to whole towns. Because if you're going to go to St. Genevieve in Missouri, that's going to take a while to cover it all. But Fort Snelling, involves a good bit of walking because it is a large sprawling site, but it's like the first building built in Minnesota. And it's just lots of layers of history. Fascinating. For instance, when like smallpox started to break out, the doctors there vaccinated all the Native Americans in the area and saved all their lives. You know, things like that that you learn where you're going, wow, I had no idea. So, I mean, vaccinations for smallpox go back to pre-American Revolution. But when Fort Snelling was built, the closest town was St. Louis. So that just gives you some idea how out there they were. So anyway, it's a gorgeous fort, and it's just fascinating to walk through and see what they have carefully preserved everything, you know, the libraries, the living quarters, the schoolhouse for the children of the officers, the living space, the big kitchens. So anyway, it's just fascinating, but you do need more time. It's not a pop in and pop out place.
Sure. You know, and this brings up an interesting point. I mean, you talk about preserving everything, and you have a note in the book in one of the earlier chapters about authenticity from a museum official in Nebraska. You know, in some ways we cannot help but look at the past through our own eyes, right? A contemporary lens. But how do you think about authenticity when it comes to historic travel?
That's one of the things that's kind of fun about a lot, especially the living history venues, that these people are so determined to make it as authentic as possible. Now, of course, as possible includes you have to have a sprinkler system so that if the building catches on fire, people don't die. You need to have a fire extinguisher nearby. You need to have running water and restrooms. So it can't be 100% authentic. But everything that can be authentic is. Huge amounts of research go into this. So So you can get an idea. And if you talk to the docents, and that's the thing that's important to talk to them, is they can explain what life was really like at that time. I can remember being back at Klein Creek Farm where the guy was, it was really hard. It was so cold in the winter that people would have the servants stand around the dining room table just to add a little body heat for the family while they were eating. That you had like 9 meals a day because you were burning so many calories, staying warm, and then doing the very hard work of farming. And that it was particularly hard on women because they'll have diaries, they'll have documentation. They can actually read to you passages from people who actually lived there. And so you could find out so much information. Obviously in museums, you're reading signs, but in the living history venues, you're talking to somebody who has really done a lot of research on that time period and really knows exactly what happened in that building and to those people.
With the modern safety brought on by fire sprinklers.
With the modern safety, yes.
Yeah. I want an authentic experience, but hold the dysentery, right?
Exactly.
Let's go. Kay in Champaign is on the line as well. Kay, thank you for calling in.
Sure. I just wanted to draw attention to the Shawnee National Forest in southern Illinois. There's so much history that began, the history of Illinois began in southern Illinois because of the Ohio River and pioneers coming down on flatboats. But there is a cave down there where part of how the West was won was filmed, and also Davy Crockett and the River Pirates was filmed there. There's just tremendous history in Illinois in the South because Illinois' history began with Father Marquette and Joliet first coming into what was then called the West. Mm-hmm. And I had to do a master's project on it, and it's just a fascinating area to get to know.
All right. Well, Kay, thank you so much for calling in. Cynthia, is that part of your
exploration? Sure. No, I'll just touch on that. First of all, one of the things I do want to underscore is that the book is about discovering, a guide to discovering. It's not everything that happens in the entire Midwest, because that would have been the Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, that would have, no publisher is going to say, sure, write as much as you can find. So I have an entire chapter in the book about how to make your own discoveries, because there are so many resources available. There are so many websites and tourist departments and just an immense amount of information available on how to make your own discoveries. Plus there's, AAA has books, and there's a vast array of information on finding additional stuff, because aside from the length of the book having a limit put on me by the publisher, there's also just the fact that I couldn't possibly have visited every place. It would have been 25 years in the making. Right. So it's one of those things where there's so much to see. And yes, Southern Illinois is anywhere on river. In fact, that's one of the tips I give on the book. Get a map and run your finger along a river, and you'll find old towns, because all of the towns started on water, because that was how you traveled. Or I shouldn't say all of them, but almost all of them started near water, because you, even if you got there on horseback, you had to have water. And it's also one of the points I make. It's like, if you see a name of a town called like with rapids in it, like Grand Rapids or Cedar Rapids, or with falls in it, like Sioux Falls, that was the main source of power. So it wasn't just your way of traveling, it was the way you ran everything. So there will be flour mills and sawmills and all sorts of other things near that. But that's why people pick these places. So water is definitely one of the ways to find how to find these old towns. And in fact, water was so important that some of the towns, like the historic Roscoe Village in Ohio, is on what used to be one of the canals, because if you didn't have a river, you built a river. And so there was an era of canal building. And so there's quite a few canals in Illinois and in Ohio. But of course, you don't have as many of those out west, because by then the trains came along. So the canals were how you moved between having rivers and getting spread out from that and getting onto the train. So
Just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. Unfortunately, we're not going to have time for the call. Rich in Champaign just wanted to recommend the Herbert Hoover Museum in
Iowa. And that's in the book. It's a fabulous museum.
Thank you for that recommendation. I guess last question, what is the best destination you visited that's maybe, you know, also the most, or the, how would you say, the least well-known, right? The best hidden gem or something like that.
Well, I mean, I think almost all of them were absolutely fabulous, but I'd say probably one that not too many people know about is the Forest History Center in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And I always tell people, make sure you go to the right Grand Rapids, because this is not Grand Rapids in Michigan. This is Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And it's a recreation of a lumber camp. And I probably ran into more information that I'd never heard before there than any of the other living history venues. Fun lingo, everything from a swing diggle to wind timbers, and the dentist is where you get your saw fixed. So just really remarkable, beautiful surroundings, lots of trees.
Wait, the dentist is where you get your saw fixed? I'm sorry, I have to pause on
that.
What is that? How does that work?
Well, it's like if teeth break or anything like that in the saw, because it's a lumber camp. So it's like that's your, you live and die with the saw. Or if it gets dull and you need it sharpened.
You go to the dentist. Huh. Fascinating. All right. Well, the book is called Destination Heartland, A Guide to Discovering the Midwest's Remarkable Past. Cynthia Clampett is the author. Thank you so much for being with us on the 21st show.
And thank you very much for the invitation, Brian. Take a great day.
And that's all the time we have for our show today. Tomorrow on the 21st, we're planning to bring you a conversation about who I would argue is the most important person in Illinois politics whose name has never appeared on a ballot. That's Ken Griffin. He's one of the very wealthiest people in Illinois, a billionaire many times over. He is backing Republican primary candidate Richard Ervin this year, as well as a slate of candidates. And we're going to talk about his influence, and what he wants out of Illinois politics. We're also going to bring you an interview with the Central Illinois-based band Mermaid Heaven. That's all coming up on tomorrow's show. You can visit our website and contact us. Let us know what you thought about our conversations. The address is talk@21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also sign up for our podcast. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Just search for The 21st. The 21st is produced by Erica Scalise and Aidan Choate. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.